Welcome to the English with Kirsty podcast from www.englishwithkirsty.com. Here I'll be sharing with you tips, information and other learning resources so that you can improve your business English. Welcome back to the English with Kirsty podcast. Today I have a special guest, and it's somebody that I don't actually know very well, so this is an adventure for me as well. We're going to get to know her together. So welcome, Tanya.
Thank you, Kirsty, and hello everyone.
Hi, so maybe you could start by letting us know who you are, what you do, and what your connection with language is.
Absolutely. So I'm a translator, a freelance translator, and I work from French, Spanish, and Italian into English. I've also diversified in the last couple of years, and so I write copy and content in English. I have always been a lover of languages. I was very lucky to have a British dad and a Swiss mum from the French part of Switzerland. So I was brought up with French, and that really did sort of start my language adventure, which then carried on, which is why today I have several languages under my belt, and I'm not going to stop.
Okay, you have plans. You've been
Oh yeah, definitely.
So when you were a child and when you were growing up with the two languages, was it in the home your mum spoke French and your dad spoke German, or did you use both languages with both parents, or how did it work when you were a child?
My mum and dad actually met in Switzerland. My dad was working over there, so they completely fell for one another, and my dad proposed and then brought my mum back to England. The only problem was that she didn't speak any English. So you could say that, you know, my mother tongue initially, literally, was French, because my mum didn't speak English. So she spoke to me in French. My dad's British, so he spoke to me in English. And you know, I actually spent the first 18 years of my life in England, did all my schooling there. So English is definitely my mother tongue, but I was always exposed to French. But as happens, you know, as soon as I went to school and everybody around me was speaking English, I didn't want to speak French anymore. But my mum continued to speak to me in French. So, you know, when I finally left England aged 18, I moved to Switzerland. All that French just came bursting out of me. And that's when I really did, you know, get my fluency back in French.
That's very fortunate. I always envy people who have grown up in this kind of situation, because nobody really in my family speaks any other language. And for me, I started, actually, my story started with French as well, but I'm sorry to my French listeners, but I didn't carry on with it. At school.
Well, it's never too late though, is it?
Well, it's not, but I've now got German and Romanian and Portuguese, and so there's like a queue. But I was really grateful for the French, because it meant that I understood. I mean, I'd always been a bit interested in languages, because I thought it was fascinating to hear them on the streets and to think, okay, that's a completely different way to communicate. And then, so at school for me, it was French and German, and I continued with the German and use it now. But then, like with you, you've got another two after French. So where did they come from? Was that your time in Switzerland, or were you generally interested in adding other languages?
Well, at that age, so 18, 19, I didn't have a clue what I wanted to do with my life. And so after a couple of years in Switzerland, where I had a safety net because I had all of my mum's family there, so they helped me out initially, I thought, right, well, I don't know what to do. Well, I don't know what I want to do, so I'll just learn some more languages. So I managed, through the company I was working for in Switzerland, I managed to get a transfer to one of their German offices, and spent a couple of years in Germany. And after that, came back, thought, right, what's the next language? So I decided to go to Spain and ended up staying there for 4 years. Then thought it was time to come back. Back in the UK, I thought, I'm still not happy. Let's go to Italy. And that's what I did. So another 4 years in Italy. And I probably would have gone on, but I came back to the UK and met my partner, and decided it was probably about time to settle down, which is what I did.
Yeah, because you don't have to stop learning languages if you settle down, you can still carry on.
No,
So.
absolutely. But I always say to people when they say, "Oh my God, you speak so many languages." I said, "Well, I cheated, really. You know, firstly, so I was brought up with two, and then I learned them in the countries, which is just so much easier. You know, now that I'm learning Russian, and this is my first language where I haven't actually lived in the country, it's just a different ball game. And of course, I haven't exactly chosen an easy language."
No. But I mean, there's a number of questions that come from that. Like for me, I've only ever done it that way. I've never lived anywhere else.
Right.
But and so it definitely takes a lot more motivation, I would say, to do it that way. But I do know people that have lived in other places, or you know, people who choose to leave the UK, for example, and go and live in other places, and they don't, even living there with all the opportunities that are there, they don't take them. So yeah, living somewhere else is definitely beneficial if you have the motivation to do something with it. But I'm thinking about your language combinations, because you've got French and then you've got Italian and Spanish. And it's interesting. Do you, in some ways, the structure probably helps because they're from the same like language family, but then do you find, did you find you had interference because there were some similarities with vocabulary or
The dreaded
structure?
interference.
Yeah.
So not with French, but that could be to do with the fact that it is, you know, a language that I've known since I was little. But yes, Itagnol, it's a constant annoyance. And it really does seem that they work along the same circuit. So if I'm using Spanish a lot in my work, or I'm chatting in Spanish, I'll find that that becomes the dominant one. Whereas, you know, recently I've been doing a lot of work from Italian into English, and I was chatting to a Spanish friend of mine on Zoom the other day, and lots of Italian words were coming out, and it's infuriating
Yeah.
because, you know, you learn languages to a good level, and then you find that, well, I certainly find that I sort of lose confidence because I think, is one or the other just going to pop in without me even realizing? So yes, it's very annoying,
So it
but
doesn't get any better then.
it
Okay,
doesn't. It doesn't.
I have this with Portuguese and Romanian. So usually Romanian words come into Portuguese, and I don't even notice I've done it sometimes until I think, actually, that doesn't sound, what's wrong with this? Oh, it's a Romanian verb that's been conjugated in Portuguese. I'm like, what? Or sometimes the words are too similar, but I think you're right. If generally my Romanian is better, so it usually goes that way. But if I've had a class and then I speak to a Romanian friend, it does happen the other way. So have you got any good tips for someone who's been doing this longer for me?
Tips about how to deal with interference?
How to
No, because
prevent.
it, I think I read an article sometime last year. I think it might have been a BBC one, and they were talking about what happens in the brain of a bilingual or multilingual. And it was really interesting. I didn't realize this. Basically, your brain has to suppress all of the words or languages that you don't want in that moment and bring out the right one. So this is what happens. I don't know if it happens to you, but so I'll be thinking, well, how do you say that in Spanish? And then the German word will pop up, and I'll think, I didn't even realize I remembered that in German. You know, it's very strange, but yes. Yeah, so it's this suppression of everything you don't need to let the thing you do need come out. And you know, you can get sort of certain triggers that will remind you of something in one language. So yeah, it's difficult. And then don't talk about, you know, maintaining or improving languages. Once you speak several, it just becomes almost impossible. But I have a tip for that, and that's allocating one day per week to each language. And I find that if I do that, so you know, everything I do, mostly everything, I will read in that language, listen to podcasts, watch Netflix series, talk to people in that language, even write sometimes. And I find that that habit really does help to maintain my languages. What about you? Is that the sort of thing that you do, or is it a bit more random?
It's a bit more I guess somebody I was talking to, and she was saying it's like having children. Especially, I mean, I don't have children, so I have no idea what it's like having children, but I have my languages are different ages. So I guess like Portuguese is the baby of the family, so probably gets a lot more attention because I have regular classes like 4 times a week. So that's gonna give it more attention because I really dislike the initial stage. I have the motivation to push through it, but that's only because I know that something better is on the other side. So I guess I try to do something every day in each of them, but also try to make activities that are not just I'm going to practice my language skills. So like I might next week I'm going to attend an event in Portuguese, like a webinar, or I might for my podcast feed, for example, I have content in all of the languages just so that one doesn't get neglected because what German needs, being my strongest languages, is different from what the Portuguese needs. The German needs to be more challenging. It needs to be more specific to my role. I'm not a translator. I'm a language trainer, but I use German in some of my sessions for beginners or lower intermediate learners. If I'm going to explain something, sometimes it's easier to do it in German or talking with HR departments to organize courses, you know, so I use it professionally. So that's a different kind of language need. But I try to have some things that, like some hobbies that I try to do in the other language as well. So like if I want to listen to meditations, or if I want to, I don't know, to do something in and keep a language for that. I think it's good to have these skills in all of the languages because if something is important to you, you want to talk about it in any language, but to kind of outsource some of the stuff that I'm going to do anyway and not just do it in English to make it because I only have so much time in the day. So things that don't need to be done in English in my free time, I try not to do them in English and to share them between the different languages.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I do the same with my daily workouts. So with YouTube, there's so much free content. So I will choose, like Monday is my French day, so I'll choose a French cardio workout and then a French yoga one. I've got my preferred sort of French yoga instructors, you know. So yeah, that kind of thing really helps as well. I mean, these days we're so lucky. If I think back to when I was in Switzerland in the late 80s, people didn't have computers at home. We didn't have smartphones, obviously, and access to content in other languages, which, there wasn't.
It was so hard.
Yeah, so these days people have it a lot easier. But obviously there's still the barrier of motivation, of discipline, consistency. But for me, my main two things are definitely adaptable consistency. So it doesn't mean I have to do, a required amount of time, but as long as I do just a little bit based on, my other priorities that day. And then habit stacking. So, listening to languages, podcasts in my different languages while I'm walking the dog, or anything I can do two or three things at a time.
Yeah, because you're using that time anyway. Or for me, it's
Exactly.
like cleaning the house, but it's boring, isn't it? So if I can do something else, that's feeding my brain, and it makes the task go a bit faster as well. But I think it's good to see how you can make it so that you're actually doing something you want to with your language and doing something you need to do or doing something that's interesting for you. So you have 7 days in the week. You have your main working languages. Does this include your German and Russian as well? Do they have a day each or?
Absolutely, they do. They do. Yeah. I mean, once I get past seven languages, I'm not sure how
Got a
I'll
problem, haven't
organize
you?
that. But yeah, I mean, Russian is still, very basic, and I've had to accept that. Although it's not exactly on the back burner, even if I just do 5 minutes of Duolingo a day, that's still keeping it there, I'm still reading the Cyrillic alphabet. I mean, it's so difficult. But there you go. It will get there, and there will be a point in a year or two when my daughter goes to uni, that I'll have more time. So it's not that I'm giving up, it's literally I'm accepting that I can't dedicate very much time to it. And the languages I already know, they are my priority, especially my working languages. But as we know, whether we're translators or not, if it's the speaking that you lose so quickly, that fluency in speaking that just seems to go straight away. We can still read well, understand well, but getting those words out spontaneously. So it is so necessary to have conversations. And these days with, Zoom or whatever you use, it's so much easier to just chat to people and keep that fluency going.
And how do you do that then in terms of your working languages? How do you, I know you're not translating into them, but how do you make sure that you keep up to date, keep your fluency, keep knowledge in the specific areas in which you're working?
So in terms of spoken fluency, well, I'm lucky that my mum's just around the corner,
Oh, that's good.
so we
Okay.
speak French pretty much every day, or should I say
Oh.
Franglais. And then I have a weekly chat with a friend of mine in Germany, in German. I also have, well, most weeks, a chat with a Spanish friend of mine who lives in Barcelona. Italian, I need to make an effort to try and find some kind of conversation group because that's the only one I'm not using regularly. But yeah, so I've got it pretty much sorted. Regular conversations, and it's not that hard, and it's always an option to do sort of half of it in the language that you want and half of it in the language that your language partner wants. I think that works so well. So with my Spanish, my German friend, she's actually from Kazakhstan, but has lived in Munich or near Munich for the last 10 or 11 years, I think. Shout out to Mira. Hello. She, when we first started chatting, she wanted to learn Spanish, so I'm helping her with that, and she can help me with Russian, although we're concentrating on German at the moment. So yeah, just finding colleagues, and these days with LinkedIn and all these other platforms, it's quite easy to. And organizing weekly chats can make all the difference in improving or maintaining your fluency.
Yeah, and I think it's also good to kind of figure out what works and find out what works with each one, because for me, I do have a few friends with whom I do that, but others, like our language is Romanian or our language is English. I don't give back as well. But with different people, I think sometimes it kind of just, if the difference is too big, or like one of my Romanian friends said, well, I've got a lot of English speaking friends who don't speak Romanian and you do, so I'm happy that we speak Romanian. So I think you have to be at a certain level to do that, otherwise it is a little bit, well, it's not so exciting for the other person if you can.
No, exactly. Yeah,
So you,
unless they're a tutor, and
yeah,
that's what
otherwise
they're
it's a
for.
bit unfair, I
Yeah,
think.
I agree.
So I tend to wait until I can at least have a reasonably interesting conversation before I do that. But yeah, sometimes, like, we have, okay, we tend to do it the other way. We say, well, okay, this is English day and then this is German day, or so we have the whole conversation in one language, but there's no reason why you can't do half and half, like you said. Some friendships tend to work better in one language, or I don't know. I think it's good to switch it up and just find what, as long as everyone feels okay and that everyone's getting something from it, I think there's so much that you can do. And we don't have advertising on this podcast, but this seems like a good time to mention the language events that I run as well. They are free. They are for people who like languages, and for you. Maybe you can find an Italian exchange partner if you come one time. They
Absolutely.
are once a month, and they are usually the third Thursday of the month, which is hard to say. But so it's today as we're recording. But yeah, if either you or anyone who's listening would like to come along to those, we don't just look for language exchange partners. We also talk about, how we're learning, if we've found a new resource, or if you have questions, or the kind of things we've been talking about today, really. So yeah, come along. If you want to know more about that, you can find me on LinkedIn, and I post all the details there, or my EnglishwithKirsty.com newsletter has the details as well. So yeah, I think it's really important because it brings the theory into practice to have friends. And it's also good for the motivation. Like if I know that if I have a friend who sent me a message and then I have to reply to her, it's like I want to reply to her, but if it was just, oh, do some language practice on your own, I might think, tomorrow's also another day. But if you know somebody is waiting for an answer, then you feel a bit more inspired to do it.
Yeah, I agree. Do you use any apps for your languages?
Not really. I think Duolingo is good for vocabulary, but less so for Portuguese because it's not European Portuguese that they have on there. Sometimes I just use it as like a to keep my brain active with something because I had some other languages that I in the past, like Turkish and Hindi, I don't keep them up to date, but I might do some on Duolingo just to see how much I remember and to I think it's a good brain training exercise. But in terms of being proactive and working on my languages, I tend to incorporate that into apps that I normally use, like WhatsApp or LinkedIn, or so some of the specific language exchange partner finding apps are not very accessible for people who work with assistive technology, unfortunately. So if they were a bit more accessible, I may choose to use them more, but as they're not, then I've worked with what's available and what works well. How about you?
I am a fan of Duolingo, although I don't think it would be enough on its own to learn a language. I mean, it's a bit too easy for my source languages, but you'd be surprised how the odd sort of grammatical thing, or even sometimes a word here and there that you've forgotten, it does help. And I have to say, I'm a little bit addicted to keeping my streak going. Oh dear. I mean, I don't mind the gamified, aspect of it. I mean, it's a little bit babyish, but for me, just doing it every day is another, aspect of my consistency. And I am quite disciplined, so it helps. But yeah, I just think, I mean, it helps to learn languages. And there's no doubt that for me, going from not being able to communicate with somebody in their language to suddenly, well, not suddenly, but to being able to suddenly speak to them in words that you previously didn't know, it's just an amazing thing. Unlike any other, well, apart from maybe learning an instrument, it's just something that amazes me every time. The fact that when I first started with Russian on Duolingo, I didn't know what any of the letters were, apart from the ones that are similar to us in English. And now I can read it pretty fluently. And I just think that is amazing, more than any other skill that we could learn. So yeah, it's something that I will never tire of. And as I wrote in my description that I sent you, by the time I'm 100, I want to know at least 10 languages.
Well, you're well on your way. You'll have to have like a
I don't know if you know the polyglot, Steve Kaufman. I think he's a Canadian. He has a YouTube channel. He speaks 20 plus languages. And yeah, he basically releases a video or two every week on various aspects of his language learning. And I think he's a real model. I think he's coming up to 80 now, 80 years old.
Wow.
And he's still going strong and yeah, a real inspiration to anybody, because so many people think, oh, I'm too old to learn a language, but that's absolutely not the case. And I think the science backs that people who speak languages or learn languages have very different brains, and it really does fire that those brain cells and keep them healthy, I think.
Yeah, and I think it also gives you, I mean, maybe some things are harder as we get older. I mean, in my 40s, I started Portuguese in 2023, and yeah, maybe, but I think it's not just the age of our brain, but it's also like the other things that we have to do. But at the same time, we have so much more autonomy as adults to design a learning experience that is interesting and fun and okay. Maybe some parts aren't so much fun when you're at the beginning, but we can make it suit our needs much better than you can when you're a child, because you have to do what everyone else is doing. So I think there's so much, so many opportunities for us to be a bit creative with it. And I love working with people who love languages and who may, because if that's there, I work a lot more with translators nowadays, and people who are interested and who are really motivated to learn and express themselves as well as they can in the additional languages, which in the case of my training is English. But if you really are interested in doing something, then that motivation keeps you going, and it's something that can actually help you to develop your brain as well. I think, people who are like this guy that you're talking about, it's good for being sociable as well. He's probably got a lot of contacts that way that he can speak with in his 10, what did you, 20 languages. And so, yeah, giving your brain something to work on, having a good social life. Yeah, there's lots of positives.
Absolutely. And I just think that, linguists especially, I've been amazed by how much we are learning every day, and that motivation to learn new things, new skills, to improve is really quite marvelous, I think, in this network of people that I've made over the last couple of years. And it's reassuring because, how many people think that once they've left school, that's it, learning has finished. And that's cutting off so many opportunities, whatever it is, whether it's a new skill or a language or, there is always something to learn. So people who are not willing to or unable to, for whatever reason, I think they're missing out.
Yeah, and I think people are missing out who say, oh, everyone speaks English, you don't need to learn other languages. I just say, no, you don't understand. But for
I know
you,
not everybody is, talented or
no.
interested when it comes to languages.
But I think it's not only talent. I think sometimes it's a bit of a cop out when people say, oh, yeah, but you're just good at that, that's why. But no, I actually work really hard. I may have some skills that make it easier, but anyone who's got any additional language to a decent level has put in a lot of work and effort, time. But for
How do you
you,
find the sort of accent part of your languages? So I think of my mum, for example, who has been in the UK longer than she was ever in Switzerland, and she still has a very strong French accent, which people love, and it's part of her. Do you work hard to remove your English accent, or do you like it?
I am flattered when people say that I don't have one. I'm also amused when people say that I have like a geographical accent. Like, apparently my Romanian sounds like I come from a specific place, which is where most of my friends are from. So I know that I do say some things in a way that sounds English. I don't think we can completely remove our accent. I don't think we I don't know, it's a bit hypocritical really, because I would like to, but I also understand that that's not possible, and the most important part is to be understood. So I think if it's becoming a problem, and people find it difficult to understand what you're saying, then it's something that needs to be worked on. But I accept that it's not, none of these additional languages are my first language, and there will be some sounds that I just can't create in the same way as other people, and that's okay, as long as I'm able to communicate well, that should be the priority. But yeah, everyone is
I
flattered
agree.
when they're told that they have a good accent.
I know. And I think it helps to have a good ear, to be able to mimic sounds. But I also think it has a lot to do with what you do with your face and your mouth and your tongue. And it's, I think you can, by making the right shapes, you can help yourself a lot to improve your enunciation of the words. But I think maybe, so a lot of Brits, they maybe don't move their mouth enough, you know, or in French, you have to pout, you have to bring everything to the front. And even, I mean, it looks silly, but if you do that, I think you'll find that it really does help to make those French sounds. It's just like anything, it's muscle memory. So if we're not used to, you know, moving our face in a certain way, then it's going to be a lot more difficult to make those sounds. But yeah, I mean,
Interesting.
I'm a perfectionist, so I really do try and speak as closely as possible to a native speaker. But obviously, there are words. I mean, some words in German, for example, took me a while to get the hang of, you know, especially things like, let me try and think of an example. Insurance. Versicherung. I think that's a really hard word to say because you've got the at the front of the mouth, and then you've got to open your mouth to do the sh Versicherung. And then you've got the ung again. So it's really quite a workout for the mouth and tongue.
So I'm intrigued. Do you, because it's something that I can't do, so I've never thought to do, but do you, when you're working on this, do you look at people's, like, study their faces as they're speaking, or videos, and so you're not staring at some random person on the street, but do you look at videos with the intention of seeing what the face is doing when people are speaking?
Not really, but it's more, you know, how it feels rather than what it looks like. I am lucky. I do have a good ear. You know, I play the piano and I like a sing song. But yeah, so yes, I suppose when I see somebody who's English and they're trying to say a word in French. No, in fact, the other day I was chatting to my Spanish friend and, you know, typical Spaniard speaking English, often with words that begin with S and a consonant. In Spanish, you add an E. So instead of saying Spain, they say Espain. Yeah.
Okay,
And that's something that's quite common, I've noticed. So I was saying to her, put your mouth forward so that you can't say the E before. So just say Spain rather than Espain, because with the air, you've got to open the mouth. So keep your mouth as small as possible and just say Spain. And she tried it and it did work. But obviously, it's habit, isn't it? This is the thing.
And it feels, or maybe even sounds, a bit strange, you know, that the
Yeah.
whole thing about recording your voice speaking the other languages, and it's not fun for anyone. But if you do it, then you can desensitize yourself a bit. And I think that helps, because if you are too worried about it, you're not going to sound like yourself. But also, the more you do it, the more you think, okay, well, this is just how I sound, and that's fine. This is my voice speaking that language, but it can take a while to get there. But if you don't do it, you'll never get it. Which is rich coming from me, who I'm always like a late speaker. I wasn't as a child, but with other languages, like with my Romanian, I was very, very shy. And then suddenly I was like, okay, I can do this. And I don't know what changed. I still make mistakes. I still have a lot to learn. But there was a point where I wasn't terrified anymore. And I think for me, that was when I felt, okay, I can get myself out of this. I know enough words. I maybe can't say what I want to say, but I can say something else. And I think then that helped. And some of the, because people talk about fear of speaking another language, and often that comes from different places, and you have to figure out what your challenge is. Like, is it the pronunciation? Is it that you feel you don't have enough vocabulary to sound reasonably intelligent? Is it that you don't want to talk because you don't want people to talk to you because you might not understand? That there can be so many different reasons why people don't want to speak. It's really good to, if that is a challenge for you, to drill down into, okay, what's the worst that could happen for you, and then how do you mitigate that, or what do you do?
Oh, I know. I mean, you know, I went to Germany without a single word of German, and the same with, in fact, the same with Spanish and Italian. I basically just rocked up not
That's
knowing the
brave. That's
languages.
courageous. I
Well, yeah, I'm
respect.
not sure I'd do that now, but I was young and stupid or fearless anyway. And I remember those first few months, you know, you feel stupid because you can't even express yourself at a child's level, you know, and you so want to be able to join in conversations, but it's just, yeah, that feeling of just I'm hopeless. I can't express myself. But then, the amazing thing happens, and all of a sudden you realize, oh my God, I've just had a conversation and I didn't struggle, which is a wonderful feeling. But yeah, I mean, speaking, especially if you don't want to make mistakes or if you're worried about it, it can really hold you back. So you just have to let it out and don't worry about it because
And
otherwise
sometimes,
you're not going
yeah, I mean, the best thing
to
you can do sometimes, I haven't managed to find one in Portuguese, but
learn.
with German, when I was just beginning, find someone who doesn't speak your first language. Because sometimes it can be quite intimidating. I've got lots of Portuguese friends whose English is amazing. But when I was younger, I had a friend, a German friend, whose English wasn't amazing. It wasn't really a thing. So German had to be our language, and I probably learned more with her than with people who could speak English really well because I had to do it. But somehow the inhibitions were also not there because I knew that it had to be me, and we couldn't just, oh, never mind, let's do it in English. So.
Yeah, and that's always a problem in Germany, of course, because most of the Germans that I encountered, their level of English was so much better than my piddly little A2 of German. So yeah, and also there isn't that fear of being judged if somebody doesn't speak, as
Yeah.
well. But yeah, I mean, it's just a question of remembering that everybody had to start at some point, and no one is brilliant,
And
and
it
some
never
people,
ends.
no, exactly.
It's
I mean, even in our mother tongues, we are never going to know every single word, and we're always learning, or we should be anyway.
We should be, and sometimes we make mistakes when we're tired or when we're excited, or it's not everybody says a perfect sentence every time, and that's
No. Oh, I know. When I've had a bad night, I can't even get my words out in English, let alone any other language, so.
so final questions. There's two. One is probably easier. I know from your I read your introduction and you talked about your beagle, so tell us something about. Because I love dogs and I need to find out all about the dogs if my guests have them. So,
Yeah.
who is the beagle?
So when we moved to Wiltshire from Surrey, we decided to get a dog because we had a lot more space, and it was also for our daughter. So I did a bit of research, quite a lot of research actually, and decided on a beagle, even though we did know that they are renowned for being stubborn, in quotes. Yeah, so yeah, we got Roxy, yeah, about 4 years ago, and it has been quite a journey. Though that first year, I have to confess that there were many times when I thought, "What have we done?" Because she was quite bitey
Oh.
and very energetic and took up quite a lot of time. But now, we wouldn't be without her. And it's also led to another specialization for my translation work because, I made a point of learning a lot about dogs in general, but also specifically about the beagle breed, so that I could understand her and her little quirks and foibles, and to improve the relationship, because with a beagle, you can't expect the same level of obedience as from a retriever or a Labrador. They're in their genes, they are hunting dogs. They've been trained to run ahead and find prey and then bay for their humans to come and find them. So it's not the sort of dog that is going to walk to heel and look up at you for instructions. They're very independent and they go off and find things for us. And they bay. That is what they do. So it has helped a lot to find out about her. And, it also made me realize that I love everything to do with dogs and dog behavior. So I've done a lot of work on, finding out about it, learning about it. And it's something that I really enjoy. So there you go. Getting
And
a
you offer
dog.
that
Yes, I do. Yeah.
as so in all of your language, like, do you do I think it says to say canine and feline care on your
That's right.
profile.
Whether it's behavior or diet, we feed Roxy raw, which can be a bit controversial, but it suits her absolutely to a T. And it's good to know that she's eating, proper, unprocessed food, in the same as way as we do, or I tried to. I don't know about my family. So yeah, it's led to this new world that I've learned about, and that's super interesting.
That's really interesting that you've got your, your passion for languages is your job because you're a translator, but also your specializations are also things. I mean, that's the best way to do it, isn't it? Because if you don't care about something, you're not going to put in the you're not going to want to work on it. But it's really cool how you can bring these things together.
Yeah, I mean, when I started, I was a bit of a generalist because, you never really know the sort of thing that you're going to enjoy translating. But I have definitely gravitated towards sort of marketing texts because I do like to be more sort of creative. I mean, I'm not a technical person. I certainly wouldn't consider legal or, patents or anything like that. It's not my kind of thing. But getting creative, yeah, that really, I love it. It's such a challenge, to write creatively, to turn something. I mean, French and Italian in particular, they're very wordy. French was the language of the courts, so it's very flowery. So changing that, transforming it into the way that English people speak or write, which is very succinct and to the point and, no fluffiness, that's a real challenge, but that's part of what appeals to me. Yeah, it's fun. It's hard. Sometimes I'll have to go away and it won't come to me until 3 o'clock in the morning. And then suddenly it's like, yes, that's the word, or that's the phrase. So it's a lot of fun. I enjoy that
Especially if
part of
it's
it.
creative in the first place, it's something that's creative in the in French, for example, with a, I don't know, an expression or a something clever with the language than to find something equally exciting or emotive or
Yeah.
yeah, it's
And then there's wordplay, which is a whole other area. It's the way we say things in English is different idioms, different sayings. It's great to try and find something that has the equivalent effect in English,
And humor as well is in advertising to try and convey, and even different types of humor that's just not funny in another language, but you have to find some way of, yeah.
I mean, sometimes you can't get the equivalent, so you, or exactly the same, so you have to find something that's close enough. And other things get lost in translation, of course. There's no avoiding it sometimes. But yeah, it's not like many people think. It's not just replacing one word in one language with another word in another. It's an art, translation. And unfortunately, with the AI hype, public perception of what we do has really been affected. So we know what we do and how difficult it is, but most people don't. And if they think that a machine can do it, then that really is going to harm the industry. But anyway, I won't go on about AI because a lot of people do.
Yeah, no, it's a relevant topic that comes up in most of the networking sessions that I run and
I
the
bet.
meetings because yeah, people are concerned about it. People want to, they have different responses, but ultimately, it is something that is affecting people's livelihoods and jobs. So, but so for people who are listening to this, if people want to connect with you, is the best way LinkedIn for this?
LinkedIn, yeah, definitely. That's the only platform, social media platform I'm on.
Okay.
I can't handle anymore.
I
It's
have more and then
time
at the
consuming
time I've
enough.
deleted them and closed them or can't be bothered with them. But yeah, it's LinkedIn is a good place to be at the moment. I hope it stays that way. I've met a lot of really cool people there and many podcast guests. It's
I
serving them
bet.
well and customers too. But yeah. So yeah, thank you for your time. It's been really good to talk about all the language topics with someone who is as enthusiastic about them as I am. It's been really good to find out what you do because there are some ideas that you have I haven't tried, I haven't thought about. So I've got some ideas from this as well. And Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me. Do you know that this is my first appearance as a podcast
First of many, I'm sure. Now you've done it,
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm going to be on a roll now.
you can. Yeah.
All
Well,
right,
it's a great
Kirsty.
way to have conversations that I would never have as well. So I love this part of my job or what I'm doing as well, because I get to talk to some really interesting people, and I hope that for the listeners it was interesting too. So
Hopefully.
yeah. Have
Thank
a great day, everyone, and we'll be back next week.
you.
Thank
Bye.
you. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the English with Kirsty podcast. If you have any questions or comments, my email address is kirsty@englishwithkirsty.com, or you can go to www.englishwithkirsty.com/podcast, where you'll find information about the individual episodes.